The American Radio Newsreel, a headline-hunting expedition on the scene of action along the news fronts of the world. Behind the headlines, the world's ace political forecaster looks into the future.
Here is Wyeth Williams, internationally known columnist and editor of Greenwich Time, the most uncanny political predictor in the world today. But I'm going to let Mr. Williams himself tell you about his predictions, which already have proved true. All right, Wyeth Williams, it's your turn.
In my column, As the Clock Strikes, printed in Greenwich Time and other newspapers, I predicted the march of Germany into Austria some weeks before it happened. I declared at the time of the Munich conference that the Germans would not march day after day prior and during that conference. About 6 months before the Russian-German alliance, I made the prediction of that happening, giving chapter and verse upon what was then taking place between the two nations. On six different occasions from last Easter until the end of July, I made the prediction that the World War number two would begin either in the last week of August or the 1st of September.
Well, look, Mr. Williams, you don't read the stars, look at the tea leaves, or gaze into crystals. Please tell our listeners how you arrive at your conclusion.
Well, I lived 26 years abroad, constantly. And when I came back, I had the forethought of establishing several very good pipelines of information, and from those I get most of my news. The underground or the grapevine routes, you might call it.
Oh, I see. Well, from your secret sources of information, have you formed an opinion about how the war will end?
I think that the end of the war will come with the definite overthrow of Hitlerism inaugurated inside Germany.
And what role, if any, do you think the United States will play in the European war? Do you believe we will be drawn in?
The United States, by the recent action of Congress, is giving its industrial force largely to the democracies, because the democracies control the seas and they can buy our material where Germany cannot. Therefore, with that great aid given to the democracies by the United States, I do not think that the United States ever will be called upon to fight in this conflict.
That should be reassuring to our listeners, coming from you, Mr. Williams. And I know they all appreciate your reading between the lines of the international news. Thank you, Wyeth Williams.
Public Forum. Editor sues minister for scientific errors in the Bible.
A few days ago, the Reverend Dr. Harry Rimmer inserted a public notice in Metropolitan newspapers offering $1,000 reward to anyone who can prove that scientific errors exist in the Bible.
The challenge immediately was taken up by Mr. William Floyd, editor of The Arbitrator, a digest magazine of news of social and scientific significance.
The exchange resulted in a court suit against Dr. Rimmer, instituted by Mr. Floyd for collection of the $1,000. The American Radio Newsreel brings you the two principals in this amazing case, exclusively and for the first time on the air. First, Mr. Floyd, will you tell our listeners how you came to bring the suit against Dr. Rimmer?
I was prepared to accept the challenge made publicly by Dr. Rimmer and immediately wrote him specifying seven of the many scientific errors in the Bible and demanding the award. As he did not reply, I asked Joseph Wheelis, an attorney prominent in freethought circles, to bring suit, and the papers were served on Dr. Rimmer and the Central Baptist Church. The case will be tried in the Municipal Court, 4th District, New York.
And now let's hear Dr. Rimmer's side. Dr. Rimmer, is this the first suit that has ever been filed against you for collection of the reward?
Once before, our committee was sued by this same attorney on this same issue. The suit was tried in the Municipal Court here in the city of New York, and our corporation won a decision.
Well now, Mr. Floyd, do you intend to continue the suit you have instituted against the Dr. Rimmer for the $1,000?
The monetary side of the case is of no importance. If Dr. Rimmer and the church will sign a paper admitting that there are numerous errors in the Bible, I will withdraw the suit.
Dr. Rimmer, why didn't your organization pay the reward to Mr. Floyd on the basis of the evidence he says he submitted?
They wrote in a rehash of the ancient ignorances made popular by Thomas Paine in The Age of Reason and by Colonel Robert Ingersoll in his rather famous or infamous book, The Mistakes of Moses. All of these questions have been answered repeatedly in the last 70 or 80 years, but we presume it would be a little difficult to find an infidel who was within 80 years of up-to-date in his thinking or in his evidences.
Well, Doctor, you say that you have tried such a case before. What do you think will be the outcome of Mr. Floyd's suit against you?
In a word, the ridiculous contention of this suit is such that it'll be difficult to get an intelligent judge to consider it with a straight face. When this same case was tried before, the judge gave a rather unique decision. In effect, he asked if the plaintiff was there when this thing happened. Upon being told that it had occurred some 3,500 years ago and the plaintiff could not be there, in effect, the judge said, well, Moses was there, so we'll take his word for it. I'm afraid that that decision must rest in this case as well.
Thanks, Dr. Rimmer and Mr. Floyd. The American Radio Newsreel is taking no side in this case, but we know that every listener in will. We'd like to know your reactions. So if you'll drop a card or a letter to us, care of this station, or to our New York Radio City studios, we'll tabulate the votes for and against and broadcast the results over this station soon.
The comic page. George Jessel reaches back for a gag about Sophie Tucker.
George Jessel, comic star of Footlights, Films, and Airwaves, pops out of the headlines of the theater section to tell us one about his old friend, Sophie Tucker. Georgie, how long have you known Sophie?
Oh, my. How long have I known Sophie? Well, there was McKinley, Garfield, James G. Blaine, Sophie Tucker, and I in a show along. No, I've known Sophie Tucker since I was a little bit of a kid. And she wasn't much more than that herself. A little heavier than I was, but she was kind of a kid herself.
Oh, my. Can you remember any amusing incidents, George, with Sophie on the stage? Have you ever played with her?
Well, in vaudeville, we always played on the same programs, on and off, two or three times a year. No, I don't. The only very amusing thing I remember was on a bill with singers' midgets. And the midgets were very fond of Miss Tucker. As a matter of fact, every time she went to do her turn, they would be in the entrance. And I'll never forget it. She came off to make a quick change, tripped over these little midgets, and turned to the stage manager and said, every time I come off here, I'm just up to my neck in midgets. I changed that around a little, but that's what really happened.
Well, thanks a lot, Georgie Jessel. And remember, there's an open invitation to come back and visit all these folks again. Thank you.
The Sports Page. A professional star comments on college versus pro football.
Just coming into the dressing room of the Polo Grounds is Tuffy Lehmans, one of the all-time greats of football. Here to interview him is your microphone reporter, Mike Blair. Take it, Mike and Tuffy.
Tuffy, what's one of the most thrilling experiences you've ever had playing football?
Well, Mike, I've had a lot of them, but I'll tell you, one of the most thrilling for me was the one when we won the championship from Green Bay last year and became the world's championship football team. It was really a thriller.
Pardon me a minute, Mike and Tuffy. I'd like to put in my oar. Do you mind telling us what you believe is the difference between the professional and the college game?
Well, that seems to be a question that's pretty hard to answer for everyone. One reason why I think professional ball is a little tougher than college ball is because, after all, take, for instance, a chain. If you have a weak link in a chain, there's always a weakness there where there's a possibility of breaking. Well, in football, so goes it, too. You might have one man that's a little weaker than the other one. What do? You just turn around and go kaplooey right into that spot. Well, professional football, where you're paid for doing things, you're supposed to have the cream of the crop. So that answers my question as far as I can tell you.
Well, Tuffy, which do you like to play the best, college or professional football?
Well, I think I'd rather play professional ball. Pardon me for getting a little hasty there, but you know, after all, I'm just out of college a little while. But you know, when you're playing professional ball, you're playing for the love of it and also getting a little check on the side.
Mike, here's that man again. Excuse me for butting in, but I'm sure the American Radio Newsreel audience would like to hear from Tuffy about Don Herring.
What is your opinion of the case of Big Don Herring Jr., the Princeton football star, who had his leg amputated due to injuries received in Princeton's game with Brown?
Well, that's a tough one, Mike. I'll tell you why. That big boy was out there giving all he had, and I imagine right now, where things are really tough on him, he's got to give a lot more. And right now is the time that I'm sure he'll come through, because on the football field, they're supposed to make characters. And I know that that boy is really there with everything that a football player has got to have, and he's got it.
And every reader of the nation's sports pages agrees with you, I'm sure. Now, Mike Blair, let's go and leave Tuffy to take a shower. And thanks a lot, Tuffy Lehmans.
Teddy Roosevelt asks aid for Chinese war refugees.
Crowded off page one for the past few weeks, but still in the news is the war in China.
The bowl of rice dinners being held throughout the nation find prominent Americans urging help for the unfortunate civilian victims of the Sino-Japanese conflict.
Colonel Teddy Roosevelt, Jr., who knows the Chinese situation probably as well as any living American, is in New York's Chinatown attending the bowl of rice dinner. From there, he explains the plight of the Chinese people and how we can help. Now, Colonel Teddy Roosevelt, speaking from Chinatown.
Do you realize that an American dollar, just a dollar, will keep a Chinese child alive for a couple of months? It's the truth. I think all Americans ought to know this, and ought to realize that if they were put aside $1, nothing more, and sent it for use in China, that dollar will spell the life, and I mean literally the life, of a child for 2 months. I'm with this work, heart and soul.
Thank you, Colonel Teddy Roosevelt. I believe I am safe in saying that many of our listeners will be glad to give whatever help they can.
The American Radio Newsreel is produced by Eric Palm, edited by Joseph Johnstone, and released by Ayers Prescott Incorporated, Radio City, New York. Your announcers, James Fleminger
and Alan Barnes.